Trip went very, very well this year. Had a minimum of jet lag, both going over and coming back. I'm not sure if your body adjusts to jet lag, but it does seem like each time I go, it's easier to make the transition. I'm grateful for that. My health was strong. It worked out very well. Dari's family were back in health. They'd had a little bit of trouble as well, but Tone is pregnant. She was having some morning sickness with that, and that eased a bit as we went through the days of Unleavened Bread as well. Mr. Keller's was sick for 2 days, missed the last day of Unleavened Bread, and was down in bed and stronger enough to get home. Seemed like he was doing better, but he did say when he got home for a couple of days, it was pretty well washed out. I'd ask you to please keep him in your prayers. And I'd like to say for Nigeria's sake, and obviously that's part of it, but you know, for all of our sake, for your own sake, pray for Mr. Keller's. It's if you think I'm a traveling minister now, you imagine if he wasn't the one that I was helping. But anyway, I felt pretty good on the trip, traveled well. Coming home on the plane, a stewardess managed to pop my bubble as I was coming back on the plane. She was picking up the trash, and I went to grab something. It dropped next to the seat. I was by the window down the side. And so I'm reaching down the side of the seat with my arm to get this piece of paper. She says, "Oh, don't hurt yourself." And I thought, how bad do I look, you know? I'm reaching over to pick up a piece of paper. And she says, "Don't hurt yourself, sonny." You know, I felt like going, ow, 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 you know. But anyway, I recovered my indignity after only a moment. I said, "Would you please bring me another bottle of wine?" I can drown my sorrows. I went this year before the days of Unleavened Bread and a week early so that Dari and I could take a road trip because that allows us to visit outlying brethren that aren't in regular attendance in the congregations. They're not people I have opportunity to see on a regular basis. It allows me to get to Abuja, which is the capital of Nigeria, but also where we have Joseph and Gloria Forson. Some people know them from years past, and friends, members of the church body up there, but in a very small group. And so I went early with the intent that we could set this up. I bought my tickets clear back in January and kind of warned Dari to set his schedule, and I was excited to do so. The month before the days of Unleavened Bread, Dari's sister set her wedding date for April, immediately prior to the days of Unleavened Bread, and all of a sudden my companion, my friend, and my driver was now committed to staying home. So we went ahead and took care of matters right there locally in Lagos and visited and had a chance to go over to Benin as well and did three baptisms in Benin and were able to counsel them and prepare them ahead of the feast so that Mr. Keller's would not have to take care of it himself. You know, I wonder how much of what it is that we do God salvages because we did it ourselves. And how much of what it is we do, God directs us and actually fulfills His will while we think it is we're getting our own way. I look back at that week in Lagos and what we accomplished, and I think it's interesting sometimes how God is working with our lives. Romans 8:28, all things work together for good. God works with us in incredibly intimate ways in our lives. I had a chance to go to a traditional wedding, Dari's sister's wedding. The wedding ceremony took 4 hours, and the reception took four more. You know, by the time you got through that, I'm not sure that wedding would be a little bit stressed out, I would imagine. I try to think of Michelle and my wedding. The wedding took 15 minutes, and there was no reception. Now, maybe that's not the balance, but I never have said I was balanced. I do remember I was a little late for the wedding because I was reading a book, and she reminded me that maybe wasn't the best, but there was only three or four people waiting, so they didn't get all held up for too long. I also got to go to church, though, in Lagos, which was not scheduled. And it was an interesting circumstance there. I've said that every time I attend in Lagos, almost there's somebody brand new sitting there in services. And 3, 6 months later, I will go back, and that person is already gone, and somebody else new has walked in the door in their place. There are a few who stay. Many of the people who are interested in God's word, it's like the seed on the stony ground. They just don't truly take root. But it is exciting because some of those people become faithful to God and diligent and continue on just as we do in this way. Came to services that day, and there was a gentleman sitting there with his two children attending Lagos for the very, very first time. And speaking to him, he had found one of our booklets in a trash bin. It was Jesus Christ, the real story. And the only thing he could see was the word Jesus Christ at the top of that booklet in the page. And it was in this trash, and it was a big bin, and he got a stick, and he fished it out of the trash. And it was all gooked up, and he cleaned it and dried it out. He said he began to sit down and read it, and he couldn't put it down. He absolutely just read it straight through, and he was fascinated. And I suppose he probably had to go and find a computer, go on the internet, maybe even had access. But he found where the church was. Then he found where the leadership base would be in Nigeria and where the local address was. And he got a hold of Dari, and he wanted to come to church. So that was the first day. He was sitting there with his children, and he was very, very excited. The problem he had, though, when he walked in the door, he couldn't see who Dari even was. Because you see, in a church in Nigeria, they had all chairs up in the front, and all the dignitaries sit in front of the congregation and look back and face the rest of the congregation. The dignitaries have special robes and special dress and special manner, and they're given deference in a way that you always know who the leaders are. He walked into one of our congregation, and he couldn't tell who Dari was or where he was sitting, as there were no special seats and no special robes and no special places. I probably stood out a little more than Dari in the congregation. He probably suspected that I wasn't just living there, you know, and had walked in the door. But the fact is, he was an evangelist. So he expected that there would be a certain amount of protocol that would be paid due to a visiting evangelist in the congregation. He had on his special outfit with the neck on it, the little band, and he looked very, very formal and nice. He was quite sincere, but it was the culture of what he was in. Finally, somebody pointed out to him who Dari was, and he was just standing in the middle of people, in the middle of the seats with no special accoutrements, and he walked up and introduced himself as an evangelist, so-and-so, and Dari says, "Well, I'm Oludari Akinbo." And that was all it was. Again, he had no fancy title to share. I went up when I found that he was visiting, and I introduced him, and he introduced himself to me as well as an evangelist, so-and-so. I introduced, "Hi, I'm Mark Mickelson, glad to meet you," you know. And I got up that day, and I spoke. Again, plain old names, plain old clothes, plain old chairs. After I gave the sermon and we were visiting, Dari said he came up to him after services, and he says, "I am ashamed." He says, "You people are different than anybody else." He says, "I am ashamed that I introduced myself as an evangelist, and here you are, and you are the pastors, and you have the responsibility, and you have taken no airs to yourself." I thought that was an interesting and remarkable example. What did we have? What booklet did we have to get out? What scriptures did I have to quote? It was simply the way we live this life. We don't have chairs up here for the leaders to look down to the congregation and be recognized. I have seen services held in Nigeria, not our own, but I have seen services held in Nigeria where a person would come up to be anointed, and they would literally bow down on the floor before the minister who was going to anoint and pray for them. We would never accept that. On at least two occasions with Mr. Keller's, where someone has come up to request prayer or to be anointed because of needing to be healed, he felt that their courtesy bow was more than simple courtesy, and that they literally had given him more recognition than they should. And so he bowed to them in return. And they bowed back, and he bowed. And twice he has literally been all the way down on the floor, as everybody would go down, and then it would stop. And he'd say, well, now, don't you think we should get up at this point? Some of the people in Nigeria, in their culture, are simply not used to being treated with that kind of deference and respect. It is a great, great blessing to be able to serve there, to come back and try to share some of the things that take place. Imagine that an evangelist, by simply coming to our services, could realize that things are simply not done this way. I wonder, by staying in Lagos, if it wasn't more important for us simply to be there. Simply to be there. Not even the words that were said, but the example that would naturally be set. There is a dynamic in Nigeria as well that I think I've come to understand. I've dealt with it in the times I've been there, but I came to understand it more fully this time. Age is respected, mostly if you're a man. But if you are a man, as you age, you become the patriarch of your family. And I mean patriarch. I mean your family and your children, your wife, give you deference. In many cases, the women are out literally running market shops and bringing in money and supporting the family in some respects to a greater degree than some of the husbands themselves, because they want to make a business deal or they want to make a big deal of some kind where they will bring this money in. And I've seen circumstances there where the women have gone out and earned the money and the men have taken and spent it on various schemes. It can be a sad situation. But age is respected. And what I've begun to realize when I looked at around the country, and I'll try to break that out just a little bit, the leadership base of the church in Nigeria has been almost entirely rebuilt. The exception to that is Benin City. In Benin, we have a congregation of about 25, and we have two deacons there who trace back all the way into the Worldwide Church of God time in Nigeria, who are faithful men, dedicated men, and who have never stepped aside. They're respectful in their with their wives and in their family, and the example they set to the church is solid, and it is true. In Owerri, we have a congregation of about 40 that used to be a congregation of 200, because they came together out of a Sabbath-keeping organization into the United Church of God. But with that came various leaders. I would say 7, 8 different leaders came in with their little village groups. There were 5 church groups in that bunch out of 5 separate villages. And each village had its own leader and its own assistant to the leader. And then there were a few other individuals that they looked to as a whole. And the older men of those individuals, the leaders who came out of those churches, are all gone. They're all gone. With the exception of the 2 deacons we have in Benin, the leadership base in Nigeria is generally no older than 40 years. When we think of young adults here in the United States, we think of maybe, except for Paul, 30 and under. Paul squeaked past that, and we're still treating him like a young adult so that we can use him and work with him, and asked him to go to Challenger 2 this summer, and he signed on, so he's going to be in the winds with us. And I'm excited for that opportunity. But basically, we say 30-something is what we say. He's a something. So we think of, in the United States, culturally, if you're over 30, remember, you know, you don't understand anymore. So, I mean, culturally, sometimes that identity is given. I would say that group in Nigeria extends more to 40, because it takes longer to get on your feet. It takes longer to get through school and to be out and away. You can leave home in the United States at 18 and get a job someplace, get a few friends, get an apartment, make your way. In Nigeria, the doors are not so easily opened. And so I would say the younger adults there will extend up into about 40. And the leadership base of the church has been rebuilt with those individuals in that way. Daria leading the way. Daria is about 40 years old, and he is a fine example. And you can see now, coming out with him, helping, assisting him, are other young people picking up responsibilities, teaching in the congregations, running the activities, helping and assisting in that way. Coleman himself is in that age group, basically, would be in around 40, late 30s to 40, looking to Dari again, Dari leading the way. I think it's a remarkable circumstance compared to even what we've experienced here in the United States, because many of our older people have been faithful. Look at our congregation where I can see today. In many respects, we have our older members. In Nigeria, in that same way, at least with the men, it simply is not true. It made me wonder. If you're the patriarch of your family, and people bow down to you effectively, I say, Dar, you worship age here. Well, he doesn't agree that they worship it. And I say, no, you worship age. The way we worship money, or the way we worship freedom, you give deference where deference is not even due. You show honor because it is the way the culture holds society together. It is the family structure. It is the way that discipline is administered. It is the way authority is maintained. If you're older, you are expected to be deferred to, even if you're not respectable. And if you're so demanding and you will not change, then those who serve under you in some way are expected to change themselves to make for peace, so that peace will somehow be bought at some price. One of the older men in one of the congregations who had custody of the church monies took the money and invested it in a business venture with the intent that he would make all kinds of returns, pay the church back, and enrich himself. When I confronted him, and it was not on this trip, this would go back into some of the times where we had a little more distress. Right now the churches are quite stable. When we confronted him about his theft, he turned to me and he says, "How old are you?" He wanted me to play the Nigerian game where I would have to bow my head and say, "Oh, I'm sorry. You can have your way." Obviously, I said, "You know what? I'm not from Nigeria. I'm in the church. I'm from God." I said, "My age is spiritual, and you are a thief." I usually try to say things very carefully. Imagine that. Steal God's money, use it for selfish purposes, and when somebody questions you, ask them if they're old enough to even be questioning you in the first place. So those who came out of the culture where they didn't have to be honorable to be honored appear to have walked into or even spent decades in the church expecting to be treated the same way. That's the way the village works. That's the way it is in the family. That must be the way it'll be here as well among God's people. That is not to be so. I'm not saying we don't give honor to our father and mother regardless, but there is a way in which that honor needs to be expressed, even when it is not due. Lagos has about 65 average attendance, doesn't count the outlying people. Again, Benin, maybe 25. Owerri, about 40. Look at Job chapter 32. We've lost the older men, I think in part because they were not required in their culture to be honorable, and they became dishonorable in the church. Job 32 and verse number 1. These are what they call friends that came to Job to accuse him. It says, "These three men," Job 32, "ceased answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Then the wrath of Elihu," he mentions his family, "was aroused against Job. His wrath was aroused because he justified himself rather than God. Also against his three friends, his wrath was aroused because they had found no answer, and yet they had condemned Job. Now, because they were years older than he had waited to speak. He let them speak. He deferred. He held his tongue. They were older. In the culture, it was not his place. But he finally got to where he could not hold his tongue any longer. He said, when Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of these three men, his wrath was aroused. So Elihu answered, and he said, I am young in years. You're very old. Therefore, I was afraid, and I dared not declare my opinion to you. I said, age should speak. Multitude of years should teach wisdom. But there is a spirit in man, the breath of the Almighty gives him understanding. Great men are not always wise, aged men, those who have been around for decades. Nor do the aged always understand justice. And he goes on and begins to declare his opinion. Dari is the only elder resident in Nigeria, but he has to win his way with the people. And he has done so. The young people very quickly and readily gave their support to him. But because the culture looks down on youth as having authority or proper opinion, he had to win his way with those who were older. He has been doing that as well. The ones who would not give him their support are gone because they were not honorable in the first place. We have one man older than Coleman who is also one of our leaders in Oweri. We ordained Coleman a deacon on this trip. Deacon in Nigeria is kind of like governor or king. I'm just saying, we ordained him a deacon. Now in Coleman's eyes, he is a servant of those people the way that he should be, or we would never have ordained him. But the older man is our treasurer, and we trusted him, and we have, and he has been faithful. And after the ordination, he got up and announced to the congregation his thanks and their rejoicing that they now had an ordained servant of God in their midst. And I went up after church, and I thanked him personally. One of the very few men who is older and in their culture should have all of the dignity handed to him. But he deferred to a younger man because God had poured his spirit out and used Coleman in that way. There are people who don't understand God's word and sit in church services. They don't have a clue. And there are people who are on fire with God's spirit. You know, the 10 virgins, 5 virgins don't make it into the kingdom of God. And yet we're talking at Christ's return. We're not talking about going back to when the apostasy took place in the church. We're not talking about people who fell aside and weren't around. No, we're talking about people that were part of the virgins that were together at the return of Jesus Christ. And at least by analogy, half of them don't get it. Don't get it. Don't understand. Don't have enough of that spirit to even be tuned in or plugged in that respect to God. So it's important. The leadership base of Nigeria now is generally 40 years and under, except, obviously, Mr. Kellers and myself. It is the young people, in part, now who have stood up and said, I am for God. And that is going to continue to build, and it is a great blessing to see it in that way. Job 32, verse number 10. Therefore I say, Elihu speaking, listen to me. I also will declare my opinion. Indeed, I waited for your words. I listened to your reasonings. While you searched out what to say, I paid close attention to you. And surely not one of you convinced Job or answered his words. Lest you say, we have found wisdom, God will vanquish him, not man. God will work with Job. You have been no benefit to him at all. Now he has not directed his words against me, so I will not answer him with your words. They are dismayed and answer no one. Words escape them. I have waited because they did not speak, because they stood still and answered no more. He waited until there was nothing left to say by the older men, and then he spoke. I also will answer my part. I too will declare my opinion, for I am full of words. The spirit within me compels me. Indeed, my belly is like wine that has no vent. It's ready to burst like new wineskins. I will speak that I may find relief. I must open my lips and answer. Let me not, I pray, show partiality to anyone. Let me not flatter any man. For I do not know how to flatter, else my Maker would soon take me away. A younger man steps up in the power of God's Spirit and begins to give evidence of the fruit of God working in him, while the older men here simply were wasting away. Who was it that the Israelites said they were concerned about after leaving Egypt and they're moving out into the desert? Who did they say was going to suffer because of what God had done? They said their children, did they not? Oh, but our children are going to suffer. But who was it that was disobedient? It was the adults. Who was it that actually entered the land? All of the kids, grown up, who became at least servants of God in that way, they followed Joshua into the land. And the adults protested and cried out to God and said, the children is going to suffer. And God says, you don't think I'll take care of the children? It was the children who went into the land. I look at that passage. I was reading through it as I studied and prepared for the sermon. I look back to Nigeria. The women, to some degree at times, have suffered under the dominion of men. Not always, but plenty of times. Have struggled under the dominion of men, and the women are still there sitting in the congregations worshiping God. The children have grown up under dominion as well, and the children are sitting there worshiping God. But the men who exercise the dominion are gone. They're not with us any longer. They took the advantage when they no longer had the authority. They walked out the door. Some of them left because we withheld authority from them. Some of them left because we took them and ushered them out ourselves. Our children are blessed being able to grow up in the church. It is an incredible blessing and opportunity to understand the truth. God intervenes on their behalf. I want to give you some of those examples. I want to share some of that with you today. People in Nigeria are pretty much just like you and me. We tend to glorify sometimes those things that happen internationally because it happens over there. And yet, if you could meet everyone over there, with the exception of the fact that they're in a dramatically different culture, you would find that, except by culture, they are much like you and me. I was talking to Coleman, and Coleman was saying, you know, about these scams. They're embarrassed because of some of the scams that come out of Nigeria. You know what it's called? It's called the Nigeria letter. I mean, The Igbo part of Nigeria is where Coleman lives. He's an Igbo. It isn't just all of Nigeria. It's Igbo Nigeria where the scams come out of, at least by knowledge. After the war, the civil war, the Biafra war, many of the Igbos were out of work because they lost the war. And they went out to try to find some way to make their way, and they invented the scam. Well, maybe they didn't invent it, but they certainly improved it. So he was saying, how can people in the United States who are so smart, who know how to build and produce all of these things, how can they be fooled? I said, Coleman, we are no different than you except by culture and maybe by education. I said, people who have more school have more education and have more opportunity to build and to produce in certain ways. I said, you are no different than that. You simply have never had opportunity in that same way. Coleman is a fine, fine man who has suffered greatly in order to serve God, and yet he is faithful. Started a project this trip in Owerri. Lagos has young people that have more opportunity, more access to education, therefore they're going to have more access to jobs and skills. They're in a city environment, so there'll be an income stream of some kind that will be in Lagos. And frankly, there's a lot of people following Dari's coattails because he has contacts with his business. Dari is on salary as a part-time minister for the church. He's the feast coordinator, he's the camp director, he's the website designer and host. He's the local pastor. He's part-time salary. He's part-time salary because we want him to be able to run his own business on the side. He spends 80% of his time working for the church. He spends 20% of the time running his business, which is computer web design and computer technology. In January, he made in 2 weeks as much as he makes by our payroll in 6 months on the side, just doing a few little things. If he chose to simply go into his business, he would do incredibly, incredibly well. But God blesses him. And he blesses Dari with contacts where he can then take other young people in the church and say, here, this is the person you have to get into that university. Here's the person you need to talk to. This job is available. They're looking for somebody. Dari will train them himself in many respects and send them off with a connection so they can get a job in some way. It is a very, very long set of coattails, but it has blessed the church in a very great way. Benin has, again, some individuals. The faithful men there have their businesses. They have the ability with a certain amount of income to make their way. The Owerri congregation, by contrast, does not have the same financial means. I had notes. I actually wrote down notes. This was supposed to be a sermon by notes. Coleman lives in one room. Coleman lives in one room. Now, it's a nice room. But even in one room, he's even got our church supplies stored as well. And at night, when his family's got four children, four daughters, when they go to bed, they just move around some stuff, the little table out of the center, they roll out the foam mat, and all six of them lay down on their piece of foam mat, and that is their bed. Now, Coleman is trained as a mechanic. Didn't go to school as a mechanic. What that means is you're an indentured servant to somebody as a child growing up, and he's a mechanic. And then he became an indentured servant to a minister as he was being trained for the ministry in this other church, and he traveled with that minister, and they trained him in the ministry as such. But he runs a motorbike for transport. It's a small motorbike. And you make your money by taking people, and much of the transportation is by motorbike. We had the greatest time. Instead of renting cars now, you know, we got Coleman and his motorbike. So we're flying down the highway on his motorbike, and I just thought it was great. You just about stopped traffic. I assure you, there's not another white man out there on the back of a motorbike. It's just not the way things work. There was a couple times we had to leave the road. I mean, you know, trucks passing, truck coming our way, and they don't care, you know, and that's why nobody rides motorbikes. Coleman just left the road. We just went. We said, okay, you can have it, you know, then whatever, we go back up. We had so much fun going to the village and riding around. I just thought it was the greatest thing. I spent a week in Owerri and worked with Coleman, visited the members in their homes, traveled around with him on his bike, and it was just wonderful. But he has one room. And our church stuff is stored there. His personal belongings and his family's life is in one room. And I'm not talking about a room with a bathroom and a kitchen. I'm talking about a room. Now, Coleman, there's a room right across from where he lives. It's full of storage and trash. And so we're helping him get that cleaned up, and then he'll do the repairs to it, and the landlord will accept whatever money goes in as against his rent, and then he can move in and have a second room to expand for his family. But he works the way he works so that he's free to serve the church. We were having a discussion over at the hotel, because I stayed in a hotel this time that was out on his end of town, which is outside of town, to be as close as I could to that end. And we were sitting there talking, and I asked him about his employment and why he chose not to go into mechanics or work in a more specific job or try to set up in a shop. And he said, "If I didn't have control of my hours, I could not be here with you today. I couldn't go with you when we need to do something else." So he actually has set himself up in order to serve the church. He lives where he lives because that's the center of where the church people are, and that's where he can function. And his wife has a little shop right out in front of where they live, and she sells cooked beans and foods for dinner or for breakfast as people come and go back and forth in their village. They live their life very, very simply, but they do so rejoicing, and he does it so that he can serve the church. In Nigeria, he would be considered a younger man. And yet here, you could be, you know, 35 to 40-year-old here is well on his way. I decided, in talking with Mr. Kellers, and he gave his approval, because Oweri doesn't have the means to support itself the way that Benin could and Lagos does, that we would start something there that the church could operate and function that would assist them in paying their own way. And so we're going to dig a borehole, a well. And it's in a village. You remember what happened when Coleman drank the water, the surface water of the land, when he was cast out of the village that he was in because they denied him access to the water? His children got sick. We're talking drinking the river water that's flowing down on the surface of the land. His children got sick. One of his children died. Now that played out in a tragic way. God gave them another child. Favor was the little girl. And again, I've had a chance to be there with him and his family. But what we're going to do is we're going to put in a borehole in that village. There are boreholes around. The people have to have access to water, but the people buy the water from the borehole fairly inexpensively. But they still buy it, and it's a business for the well. So we're going to start a business in Oweri with a borehole, because it doesn't take a lot of maintenance. It's needed for the people of the village. We can use it to assist those who are in need, the widows or others that might be indigent in that village, and we can give them the water. But it will provide a means for Oweri to then raise funds and begin to pay for their own way, pay for their own hall, send their young people to camp. And so I left a gift at this last trip, and we'll slowly put that operation in place. It'll give the congregation there something that they can look to, rely on, work with, in that sense, with their own hands. So there have been some great blessings, but there is great commitment as well. Israel said the children would be the victims, and God said, "Look, I'll take care of the children. You turn and worship me." The brethren in Nigeria are much the same as us. Some of them are caught up in the world and busy with their commitments and obligations. Some of them doze off while you're speaking in services. And some of them are absolutely on fire, and you can see it. You can see it in their eyes, in the attention, in their focus. Are we any different than the people that were in the Bible who were servants of God? Are you and I different than Elijah? Jeremiah. Are you and I different than that? James chapter 5. Those are people that put their pants on the same way we do, as has been said. James chapter 5. That's one of the things I was trying to show Coleman. Coleman, you are the same as we are. We are the same as you. We don't have special uniforms and special seats, and we don't have titles that we use, because we're all in this together. We have different obligations and responsibilities, but nobody is lifted up over anybody else. James 5 and verse number 10. I want to make sure I'm in the right place. "My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience." Why? Because you're just like they are. So their example means that we can take that and apply it in our lives. It's not like somebody did something that was too great for us. They're an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You've heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. Verse 17, Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, which goes a little bit beyond the fact that he was a human being compared to an angel. Okay, it goes a little bit beyond that. He had a nature like ours. He struggled with sin. He became frustrated and afraid, but he was a servant of God in whom God had placed his spirit. And he prayed earnestly that it wouldn't rain, and it didn't rain on the land for 3 years and 6 months. Now, he didn't just make that up and decide, here's what I'm going to do. He's doing it according to God's will. He prayed again, the heaven gave rain, the earth produced its fruit. God worked through him. Miracles were wrought. The Spirit was poured out in a dramatic way. We are servants of God as these are. And the brethren in Nigeria are servants of God as we, and we as they. The difference is in our culture, in our opportunity, maybe in the things that we experience. One of Dari's sisters lives with him in the home. Dari also just took in his nephew and then another niece. There is a traffic of the young people that is in his extended family that move into their home and are cared for and sent to school and trained and brought up and exit back out and become more productive citizens as a result. It is the way the culture works. Dari's sister is in her 8th year of a 5-year legal program in college. 5-year program to be a lawyer. She's in her 8th year. She's in her 8th year because it doesn't always run. The school's not always in session. The professors don't always teach. It's taken her 8 years to get through the program. She was in her final year. Last year at the feast, the professor in one class scheduled the midterm examination during the feast itself. She went to a professor. She says, I cannot be there. I have a religious festival that I must attend. He said, you must get your priorities straight. You cannot do so. I do not permit it. She went to the feast, and she came back, and he flunked her. He didn't flunk her in the test. He flunked her in the course. She got a 0 and therefore no credit. Now, she finished the year, missing a required course. She did not graduate with her peers who went on into their national service. In Nigeria, when you graduate from college at a certain age, I'm not sure if it applies outside of college, I suppose it does, but at some point in time, you go into national service. And you go out for a year, and you serve in an area that the government gives you in a particular responsibility to give back to the government for the services that they have basically denied you all the rest of your life. But it is how, again, the system works. So her friends advance into their national service to go forward in their skills and their training, and Dari's sister is held back. Next fall, she has to go back to school for the 9th year. She has to take that same course. She has to hope that she doesn't get the same professor and hope that the professor doesn't schedule the same test during the feast this time, or it'll happen again. And she said, I will do it again. I will do it as many times as I have to. That's a pretty big step. She's baptized. She's committed. She's living this life going this way. Hebrews chapter 12 comes right after, obviously, Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 is a faith chapter, and it's a list of people just like you and me who are faithful servants of God. And some poured out their life unto death in their commitments. Hebrews 12. Therefore, because of all of these examples that have been given the chapter before, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us set aside every weight and the sin that so easily ensnares us. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, These others ran their race. The example is for us to see. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. The author, probably Paul, is saying, they did it. Now let's do it. Let's you and me do it too. We are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. If we lived 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, I guess you'd have to at least go back to 2,000 or we wouldn't be before the Bible record finished. Would our names be included in the list if God had called us into service in that way? Will our names be included if the record continues? Will some of our names be added back in? I told you again the problems that Coleman had in his village and how he ended up and landed where he did. There is one other couple that was in the village that Coleman was kicked out of who still continue to attend the church today. One couple. They live about 7 miles away from where church meets. They have children. They cannot afford to get on a bus, a public transportation, which is kind of a little van is what it really is, and pay for the family to drive all the way to church and back every Sabbath. In fact, they can't afford to pay to bring their children at all. So they each week, the two of them, the husband and the wife, get on their bicycles and they ride 7 miles one way down the highways, through the trails, up and down on the through the villages to get to church. After church, they ride back home and then they teach their children. They can't bring their children to church. They don't have the means. Now, we used to have 5 churches in Owerri, all scattered out in the villages, and then everybody that wanted to attend could attend in a more local manner. But the problem was leadership. We did not have faithful leaders. We had Coleman, and we had Oliver, our treasurer. And Coleman was the one I could trust to teach. So we put the church in one place. One of the blessings now, hopefully, that we will be able to do by putting in that borehole and setting up where they can have a small church business. It's only selling water, but it's water the village can use, is that they can use some of those funds to allow that couple that rides their bicycle in then once in a while to take the bus and bring their children. They can have their own means. I expect it will not be too hard to see that project through. Skip 3 or 4 pages since I'm not speaking much from notes today. When God works with us, it's incredible. We went to Benin, I said, and performed 3 baptisms, counseled and did 3 baptisms. Now, the deacons that are there had done the counseling in advance, and we simply had to go and confirm that these things were so, and then we had a great time. It's a little stream, wanders down outside of town through the bamboo and the brush, and the water's all murky and muddy, and you go through, and we took pictures of it, and Dari sent one back to Michelle, and she put it out up in Post Falls. And the first question everybody said was, what is in that water? And I thought, this is great. I'm going to take Photoshop, and I'm going to take that picture, and I'm going to put like a tiger on the bank, and then a big snake going down, and something else, you know. And I'm going to turn into the United News and say, we just got back from Nigeria. Look at this. I thought that means it's a great show. I mean, it'd be believable, but only in the United States. But anyway, we had 3 baptisms. And there was a couple there, and a husband and wife, who, again, are a little older, but are just now being baptized in the church. The man had read the entire 32-lesson Bible correspondence course back in the early 70s with the Worldwide Church of God. Had the whole course, went through it, formed a study group, had a group of people that he was teaching out of the Bible study course back in the 70s. And then through what other means it was, whatever happened in his life, he set it aside and he kind of wandered on his way. More recently, he got to thinking back at what he had once known and understood, and he just felt compelled to follow up. He wanted that back, but he wanted it more fully. So he actually still had the correspondence course in his records, and he went back and he picked out the address for Brickett Wood and South Africa, and he sent letters off, again, now looking for the Worldwide Church of God. Where is it today? Both of the letters came back undeliverable, because those addresses no longer exist. And then one day, a Good News magazine arrived in the mail. I asked him, how did you get the Good News magazine? He says, I don't know. I said, well, who sent it? He said, I don't have any idea. It just came in the mail. He was looking for the truth. The address he had was no good. I don't know. God sent him a Good News magazine. You think God can't run the work? You think we're going to get in the way? Well, we could. My personal belief is that he's always done the work in spite of us anyway. Maybe we shouldn't make it quite so stressful to God to work with us, but the fact is, we never have run this work. We never have solved the problems. We never called anybody. Somehow, God just said, all right, here's the good news. He and his wife were baptized just for the days of unleavened bread, kept the Passover. What a wonderful, great blessing that was. How incredible. We wanted to baptize him in the pool at the hotel. If you want to get a cultural taste, nice hotel, nice pool, little bar off to the side. That's where we were staying that night. We were just there one night. And we decided, well, we better ask. You know, we don't want to just go out and do baptism out in the open pool. You know, we'll ask. Manager said, oh, you can't do that. No, you can't baptize in the pool. You're washing the sin into my pool. See, it washes away the sin. And he says, you're going to have to sanctify the water before you do the baptism, and then you have to clean it and sanctify it when the baptism is over. He said, on second thought, no. I don't want to risk it. This is a nice place. He didn't want the sin washed into the swimming pool. You think God doesn't call us out of this world a long, long ways? I know. I came from a long ways away. So did some of you. God brought us in here to put him first. Deuteronomy 16, God describes how, in the course of keeping the feast, how he has an involvement in that, how important that involvement is. Deuteronomy 16, verse number 5, you may not sacrifice the Passover with any of your gates which the Lord your God gives you, but at the place where the Lord your God chooses to make his name abide, there you shall sacrifice the Passover at twilight, at the going down of the sun at the time you came out of Egypt. So it talks about God laying out the fact we do it in the place that he chooses. You go over here in verse number 15. We're now at the Feast of Tabernacles. 7 days you keep a sacred, very important feast to the Lord your God in the place that the Lord chooses. So God constantly reinforces it. Verse 16, the place he chooses. How do you know what God has chosen? Does he send us a registered email of some kind or a registered letter to say, here's the place I'm going to choose? Well, he works it out through the decisions, through the examples that we understand, see, through the things that happen. We went to Benin. The deacons there had searched out some hotels. The one hotel that we wanted to use that had a price that we thought we could afford but was nice enough with facility didn't have enough rooms for the whole group to stay there. We're talking about a central feast site, so we're talking over 100 people are going to assemble, all of those who are able, from Nigeria for the feast. They didn't have the room for that. So then we were looking at, it's nothing for us to stay in different hotels. We have cars. We have nice cars. We can go and travel, come back and forth. We can meet in a big hall. But over there, it's not the same. It's public transportation. And it's people, in some cases, without that same kind of means. So we wanted a place where we could be together. The other hotel that was available to us, we did not like the facility, and frankly, we didn't like even the staff. And we did not want our people having to stay in an environment like that for the feast. There was another hotel that the men there in Benin had gone to on three different occasions because it suited all of our purposes. It fulfilled all of our needs, but you know, it was just too expensive. They'd been there three times, and it just wasn't going to work out. Dari said, well, let's go see it. Show it to me. Who knows? Who knows what God will do? We went. It was clean. Huge. Bigger than anything we could ever even use. Fully. Nice rooms. And I mean, this is nice Nigeria style. I'm not talking about the Sheraton here, okay? But this is nice. I mean, I'd be happy as a clam if clams are happy. I'd be happy as a clam. Stay there myself. It had air conditioning in the main hall. I've never seen it. Air conditioning. Actually, probably more comfortable than this room is here today. Still, it was more than we could afford. We couldn't stay there. You're right. This place is too expensive. So the gentleman that's showing us around, showing us the facility in the room, Dari's talking to him a little bit. And he said, well, look, you know, our church members aren't businessmen. They're not bringing income or increase here of their business. They have to pay their own way, and it's going to be very, very hard for them. They can't afford your facility. This is a very nice place. And the man goes, church members? Well, the GM, general manager, as it's used over there, the GM is very favorable to churches. We give churches half off. Half off. Room, hall rental, cut in half. And we went in and we spoke to him. He says, oh, yes. He gave us his card, and it has deacon right on there. He's in a church, and it's very, very serious thing. You know, we had half off at the hotel we stayed at last year, and this year is going to be cheaper than that. It brought the cost of that down right to where we could actually stay in one place. And I, not only that, there's air in the hall they meet in, as compared to other places I've been. The general manager wanted a deposit. You can imagine, you know, over 100 people are going to come to this hotel, and you're renting the room, the big meeting hall as well, so he wants a rather sizable deposit, and we weren't carrying anything like that. I had some money because we were getting ready to head for O'Weary, so I had some money, but a token, and I just said, look, all I can give you is this. It was like a fourth of what he was asking. He looked at us and he looked at that and he said, okay. He took the deposit, quite small. God works things out. I believe that's where he placed his name. He opened that door and he brought it to where we could be there together and worship before him. We do our part, but we trust God to supply our needs. Betty Young has lung cancer. And it's spreading. And the last time she went to have the fluid drained from her lung, there was no fluid to drain because there's now a mass in the lung that she thought was fluid. She's very strong in her faith. She's trusting God according to his will. I went over this week and was visiting. She handed me a copy. She showed me a book she was reading, and there was a poem in there. And I really liked the poem, and so Dick went and copied it and gave it to me. I want to share you something that, you know, Betty pointed out to me. And she's using this to illustrate, you know, this is how life works, and this is what we need to do. We're trusting God, but here's how God responds when we trust him. It's in the middle of a context, but I'll just read the poem. It's about somebody who is going before God and suffering loss by their appearance. They've lost all of these things in serving God. It says, one by one he took them from me, all the things I valued most, until I was empty-handed, every glittering toy was lost. I think Coleman is in one room because he serves the church and he rides his bike because he wants to be free for when the church needs him. I walked earth's highways grieving in my rags and poverty, till I heard his voice inviting, lift those empty hands to me. So I held my hands toward heaven, and he filled them with a store of his most transcendent riches, till they could contain no more. At last I comprehended with my stupid mind, so dull, that God could not pour his riches into hands that were already full. I thought, that's interesting. That's what Betty's saying. She's saying, I'm dying. I'm trusting God. I'm hoping yet to be healed. It's all going to go away in this flesh. But she's saying, you know, God gives us, he fills our hands when they're open to receive his blessings. But we have to let go of the trappings and the purposes in all these things we clench onto are trinkets and toys in the process. I said, Betty, I think I can use that this week. I think it fits right in with what I want to illustrate. I took the sermon with me this year on integrity. It's a sermon I had written and given here previously, just a few weeks before. I had the Sabbath in Lagos, as it turned out, before the Days of Unleavened Bread. I had the Sabbath at the beginning of the Days of Unleavened Bread in Owerri. So I took that sermon, and I gave it. I told the story of John Huntsman, who sold part of his company to another chemical company, an individual, and how the value of John's company had exploded in the 6 months it took for them to get all the paperwork drawn up. And the man he was selling his portion to said, look, I'll split the cost of the increase in value with you. The difference was just under $200 million in terms of the increase in value of that portion of his division that he was selling. And John says, no, you won't. I gave you my word. And so I use this example. But I said in church, this is in Owerri, I said, you know, who here would be willing to break their word for $98 million? And the man in the back row said, I would! He got, you know, a few people looked at him like, that was not the right answer. That was not the right answer. But he just said, please, please, let me break my word for that. Okay, he's not ready for Hebrews 11 just quite yet. But maybe he's still on his way. I mean, he almost jumped out of his chair. I would. Okay, he might have to wait. There's others that are coming along quite well, though, I assure you. One young lady in that category that I mentioned, you know, the 40 and under, has been in a PhD program. She's a teacher. She's been in a PhD program for 6 years. Her professor will not advance her to graduate and get the PhD. And do you know why? He wants some personal favors. You can say he wants to have sex with her. So here's a young lady in the church, young in that category, who can't finish her PhD program, has finished the studies, done the work, and needs his permission to be credentialed in that way. And she cannot compromise that, obviously, nor would she. But she's held up as a result. Her sister finished college, was still living at home in that same category. I've mentioned this in other circumstances to you. You won't necessarily know to put it together, but you might remember in some of my sermons. Her parents pressured her to go to one of the native healers because of some problems that existed. Juju, which means voodoo in Haiti, which means spiritism. And the doctor, I guess if they call him a doctor, a witch doctor, but it's in that context, this is a native healer, put cuts all over her body in places to put the herbs and things in and to work with her. And her parents required her to offer an animal sacrifice. She had to leave home. When you leave home in Nigeria and you're a young lady, a girl, it isn't like you just move into the women's shelter. There's no social network in Nigeria. You don't have food stamps. You don't have welfare. You don't have all the social system that supports them. She had to literally leave her home to worship and obey God without that kind of stress and pressure from her family. There is a lady in that young adult category in Owerri, finished college, supposed to go on to a national service, had to take a particular test for certification. The professor required additional money from her in order to seat for the exam. He would not let her sit for the exam unless she paid him a bribe. There was no way to take the test without his permission. She missed the scheduled test. It took her time to raise the money. The fact is, Dari helped her with the money so she could advance herself in her schooling. She paid the fee. She took the test, but the results have yet to be released. The lecturer who controlled that process offered to meet with her and discuss the matter at a motel. She has deferred. Dar is hoping that the results will be released later, at a later date, and that she can continue on in her service in that way. There is a young lady in the young adult category in the Lagos congregation. Whenever I go there to speak, she's always listening. She's alert. She's sitting up in the chair. She's leaning forward. She's listening to every word. She wants to hear what I am there to say. When Dari speaks, she wants to hear what he has. She wants to be taught. She needs to finish her BA, bachelor's, in college. She's in her 20s. She went to work because of finances and other things, but now she wants to go back to school. To go back to school, you have to be accepted for admission in one of the universities. It means you have to have an interview. You take a test. You qualify by score. You get an interview with the department head for the area in which you want to do studies. You have to have connections to walk in those doors sometimes. Dari opened that door, set her up with the connection. She had her test, and the interview was during the Feast of Tabernacles. She asked the professor for a delay, and he says, no, you need to get, again, your priorities straight. He rescinded her application for admission. She went to the feast. She starts over again and applies again and will try again in the fall. She lost an entire year. She said, I'll do the same thing again if I have to. To me, these are the witnesses of what God's fruit is doing, His Spirit, in people just like you and me. And the example, I think, is sound. I think it should help each of us. Romans 8, verse number 18. I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. We're all in bondage in this world to the degree that we stay in this world. But even serving God in the church, Satan still has his claws, so to speak, on us to the degree that he can. But only by inconvenience. Because we serve God. And we put God first. Resist Satan, he'll flee from you. You bow down to him and he becomes your master. What kind of price have any of us paid to obey God? What is it? Is there anything that we would not be willing to give up if we had to put God first? Go back to Hebrews 12, follow that context a little further from where I read before, verse number 3. Consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin. You haven't had to lay down your life to the end. Hopefully we serve to the end. That's what Betty wants to do. She wants to serve God to the end. And if God in his grace will heal her, she requests and desires and cries out for that as well. Now in verse 12. Therefore, strengthen the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees. Make straight paths for your feet. For that which is lame may not be dislocated, but rather be healed, so that that which is lame may not be made any worse, but rather be healed. Acts chapter 1, as the church here is waiting for God's instructions, Jesus Christ. Acts chapter 1, verse 6. When they came together, they asked him, saying, Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? He said, it's not for you to know the time or season which the Father has put in his own authority. Don't ask me how long it's going to take, how many hours you'll serve in the heat of the day. That's not the answer that you need to know. He says, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you. You will be witnesses to me, or of me, or my witnesses in Jerusalem, in Judea, in Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. You will be my witnesses. A body of witnesses, as it says in Hebrews, a cloud of witnesses. by our example, by the decisions that we make, by the fruit that we bear and is seen by those around us. Back to Hebrews 12. Same thing I read at the beginning, but the first two verses. Therefore, we also, you could say, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, well, is surrounded only the Scripture, or is it not the examples that are set by those in our midst, by some of us, by those young ladies, by Dari himself and his family, and the young people who have stood up to put God first? Let us lay aside every weight, the sin which so easily ensnares us. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. That is our potential, to be like our older brother, Jesus Christ, to serve before God for eternity.